This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. How does a democracy become a dictatorship? And what makes people cooperate with a brutal regime? The new book, A Nation of Enemies, uses Chile as a case study of how one dictator established a climate of fear. Chile had been one of Latin America's more stable democracies until Augusto Pinochet seized power in 1973. Last year, his rule was ended and Chile returned to democracy. My guests are authors Pamela Constable and Arturo Valenzuela. Constable has been the Latin American correspondent for the Boston Globe since 1983. Valenzuela is a professor of government and director of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University.
Well, I think that what we set out to do was to try to explain something of a puzzle. Here's a country that for many, many years had been viewed as one of the beacons in Latin America, a country that had established democratic politics a long time ago, way back in the 19th century, and it was known for its civility and its good behavior and its congressional debates and so on and so forth, and yet was taken over by a brutal military government. And we wanted to understand what happened, why this happened, and then what happened to the society during the period of military rule. You know, how did the Chileans cope with the military rule? What happened to the justice system? What happened to the political parties? Why a society became, as the title of our book implies, a nation of enemies? Because it wasn't a nation of enemies prior to that.
You think that the simple answer to the question is, how does a military dictator establish the climate for dictatorship in his country is fear? Does that about sum it up?
Partly, I would add to that word anger. There was tremendous anger in that society, tremendous division and hatred that had been generated within the society during the socialist period that preceded the military government, which enabled it to use that kind of emotions to establish the kind of culture of fear that you're describing.
From reading your book, I get the impression that the first place that Pinochet established a climate of fear was in the military itself. How did he do that?
That's exactly right. When the military took over, they weren't really prepared for what was going to happen. And certainly most of the people within the ranks of the military institution weren't really prepared for what was going to happen. And there was considerable trepidation on the part of the leaders about whether the coup was going to work. In fact, they weren't really confident that the society was going to fully support them. And they weren't even that confident, I think, that many of their own officers were going to support them. So when they moved very, very viciously against the constitutional government, what they tried to do was to instill within the institution itself a feeling of fear. The linchpin of this was the so-called Z plan, which was a classic counterintelligence or black warfare measure on the part of the military themselves. And they basically tried to convince their own officers that in fact they were targets themselves of some kind of assassination plot on the part of the left. And this engendered a feeling of fear. But you also have to remember that any professional military institution is trained to go to war. And even if the adversaries are not very, very strong, they will hit them with everything they have. And that's what we got from many of the officers who said, look, you know, we realize now that maybe we went too far, but you know, we were trained to kill. And in fact, when we were faced with that, we just had to give it all we had.
Well, Pinochet actually declared a state of internal war. What kind of power did that give him within the military?
There were a number of different states of emergency, as they were called. They primarily, for example, gave the military essentially authority to declare curfews, to censor all the media. There were hundreds, literally hundreds of legal decrees, all of which dealt with various stages of suppressing civilian rights.
I'm wondering if you found with your interviews with military people, if they did what they did under Pinochet out of fear or out of belief and loyalty.
I would say that it's particularly important to add the concept of anti-communism as a doctrine that was ingrained into the Chilean army in particular, for the past 20, 30 years. Until the 70s, it was really an abstract concept for most of them, but it was very, very much indoctrinated into them. And then when they saw socialism actually coming to fruition in Chile and they disliked much of what they saw, they felt the society was being torn apart, losing control. This built up in them a kind of an obsession. In fact, the kind of words that Pinochet and his colleagues on the junta used repeatedly were these apocalyptic phrases: "We must uproot the scourge of communism from our country." These kinds of slogans were used repeatedly to galvanize both the civilian populace and, in particular, the armed forces into maintaining this high level of rage and of really almost hysterical obsession with wiping out not only the radical but also the moderate left and indeed any opposition to the government.
If you're just joining us, my guests are the authors of a new book called A Nation of Enemies, Chile Under Pinochet. Pamela Constable has been the Latin American correspondent for the Boston Globe since 1983. Arturo Valenzuela is a professor of government and director of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Pamela Constable and Arturo Valenzuela, co-authors of the new book A Nation of Enemies, Chile Under Pinochet. You write in the book, like all dictatorships, Pinochet made spies of the unscrupulous, sycophants out of the ambitious, and conformists of the majority. I'm wondering if you were able to interview anybody in Chile who spoke honestly about turning a friend or a neighbor or a colleague in to protect themselves or for any other reason. Are people at the point where they can talk about that to you?
In fact, this happened on numerous occasions. And I'll tell you why. They might not have told us about this if they had known what would happen to the people. But very often, people turned friends in or even children in. We interviewed a father and mother who turned in their daughter to the police. But they didn't think at the time that anything really serious would happen to them. There was kind of a basic trust and belief that there would be a due process of law, that if they had been involved in anything that was illegal, that they would be tried, and they would have to pay for the consequences. In a sense, they were reacting from the civic traditions that were always present in Chilean society. And of course, what happened was, to their great horror, that their loved ones or their friends disappeared. So, time and time again, we came across that.
Why would a parent turn in a child? Maybe you can explain from that example that you just told us about.
Well, in the case of the family we mentioned, and it's, I think you can generalize, it was a combination of, again, fear, respect for the authorities, the presumption of, in Chile it had such a civilized society for so many generations in which the military was subservient to civilian authority that people really couldn't believe that anything horrible would happen. In the case of the family that Arturo mentioned, this was a sort of middle-aged, middle-class couple whose daughter, like many other college students during the era of the Allende government, which preceded Pinochet, had gotten involved in leftist politics. It was very fashionable. It was the way things were going in the late 60s and early 70s in Chile and throughout the hemisphere. They didn't take it that seriously, and they didn't take what she was doing that seriously. And when the police came and said they wanted her for questioning, They were worried, they were concerned, but they had no idea that she would end up, in fact, tortured to death.
And they bear a great cross today. It was one of the most moving interviews, spending an afternoon, a Sunday afternoon, with this couple who's now raising their granddaughter, the daughter of this daughter of theirs that the mother herself turned in, and it was an extremely poignant experience.
Is this fairly typical that were there a lot of middle class families where the parents were appalled at the leftist leanings of their children and couldn't understand it, and ended up doing the wrong thing, like turning them in?
Yes, indeed. And also there were many examples of people whose relatives were turned in by others, or who turned themselves in, or who were caught. Pillars of the establishment who found out that their niece or someone else in their family had been picked up, and then they tried to pursue various avenues in order to have them released or at least have them tried, and much to their horror found that was not possible.
It no longer counted. It no longer counted if you were an important person because everything had changed.
What do you think made it possible for the people of Chile to end the dictatorship of Pinochet?
Well, that's a short question with a very long answer. I would say it was a combination of many factors, one of which was international pressure. The United States in the mid-80s underwent a very strong change of policy towards Chile and made it very clear that it was no longer going to sit idly by and support what the regime had been doing. Also, people were very strongly motivated by the economic problems the country was having. One of the things that kept the regime going for such a long time was that it did stabilize the country economically and achieve a certain measure of economic success, and this put off what could have been a much earlier degree of protest against the government. After the economy collapsed for a second time in the early 1980s, people really were fed up, and the poor were getting poorer, and the middle class practically didn't exist anymore. And you had a sort of cumulative impact of political frustration, economic frustration, and the beginnings of international pressure against the regime, which combined to begin to sort of reawaken the old democratic roots and desires that people had suppressed in themselves for a decade.
I think you have to give a lot of credit to the opposition parties. At the end, there were 16 opposition parties, but they were able to bury their fundamental differences and come together in a common strategy, a common program, to try to defeat the dictator himself. And let's remember that in Chile, what's extraordinary is that the defeat of the dictator does not come through some kind of insurrectionary process or some kind of large mobilization of the masses, but through a defeat of the dictator in an election that the dictator himself had planned in order to legitimize further his own rule. So what these parties were able to do, and it took a lot of discipline and a lot of strength, was to bury their differences and then beat the dictator at his very own game.
Pinochet is that rare dictator who has managed to keep a government position after being deposed. He's the head of the army. And I don't know, I still kind of find that hard to fathom.
Well, in fact, it follows directly from what I just noted. The fact is that how did the opposition defeat the dictator? They realized that they did not have a chance to defeat the dictator or the president, the self-proclaimed president himself, with some kind of insurrectionary process. That they could only defeat him through the rules that the dictator himself had set up. And the irony is, of course, that by entering into the legality of the dictatorship, they, in a sense, accepted the legality of the dictatorship. And they accepted the rules and procedures that were set in place at the time. And among the constitutional rules that they had to accept was the fact that, according to the Constitution of 1980 that Pinochet had implemented, the commanders-in-chief of the armed forces could stay in office without being removed all the way up until 1997. So the new government, the democratic government, bound by the rules, in a sense, that they inherited from the past, can't then fire this gentleman.
I think it's important to add that even though he remains commander of the army, Pinochet, he really has behaved himself. He's made a couple of moves to try and undermine civilian authority, but he's been very firmly put in his place by the civilian president. And I think the reason he stays on is partly out of a pique and partly because he has vowed repeatedly to protect his men from any prosecution for human rights abuses. And so he's really staying on also out of loyalty to his troops who supported him during the regime. But as a political threat, I would not regard Pinochet at this point as any sort of danger to civilian authority or to democracy in Chile.
Do you think of the Chilean democracy as a stable democracy?
Well, right now it's still a democracy that is trying to feel its way. And I think that there's great hope for Chile because it did have a strong democracy in the past. And that's a very important element. But there's still a long way to go. For example, they really still have not had a completely free and open election because the electoral rules that they had in place for the last election were electoral rules that were deliberately designed by the military government in order to encourage support for its own supporters. It remains to be seen if in fully open and competitive elections, Chileans will be able to compete with one another with rules of civility. I do believe that that's going to happen. We do think that. But there's a long way to go before they can learn to compete again with one another fairly and openly.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Arturo Valenzuela and Pamela Constable are the authors of A Nation of Enemies, Chile Under Pinochet. This is Fresh Air.